Right. So we'll wait a little bit to have everybody there. The plan for today is to go on with the lecture and to switch to the pattern interaction. And before that, we'll have a look at some visualization and try to practice the fact of reverse engineering the visual mapping for visualizations. So maybe what we can do is start with that. And as I told you already, on the web page for the lecture, there are links to. I will switch to web page. There are links to previous exam subjects. So if you go to this link there, put it in the chat. There are links there to the subject for the past exams, and as you can see, I'm also switching on the Mattermost channel, but you don't really use it. So there are links to subject of the exam from past years. And as you can see, for example, this was 2 years ago. I should also put online the one from last year. Maybe we can start with the one from last year. Where is it? Okay, switch to this one. Okay, so as you can see, there are several parts in the exam. The first part with a classical question, you can read those. And there are another part with some visualization, and typically I ask you to give the visual mapping of the chart and explain why this encoding is good or bad. Okay. And in this case, the visualizations were those. So this one, maybe it's too small to share it. And maybe we can start with this one. So the image showed the evolution of the rankings of the UK Premier League male football championship. And the question was, list the attributes of the data shown by the graph and give for each of them its type and the graphical variable used for its encoding. So basically that's giving the visual mapping, okay? And then we will move on and explain why this encoding is good or bad according to Bertrand's criterion, right? So that's this chart there. I will share it so that I can write on screen. So just another moment. Can I do that? Okay. We share this one. Sorry for the mess. Okay. And now you should be able to see my face, and I should be able to focus on this port. Okay, there's nothing. Okay, it does not work as expected, but never mind. So we have a chart there. On the... I'll try to make it bigger for you. Okay. On the horizontal axis, can I write on that? Yes, okay. On the horizontal axis, you can see that we have the time going on. And on the vertical axis, so there was a description that the rank of the different football team. From the leader of the championship to the worst team in the championship. And then we have all the teams listed there. And the question was, what is the encoding? So I will put the... I think I can share the document. The chat. Yes, I can do that. So you will be able to open the PDF on your side. Maybe it's easier like that for you. That's it. Okay. So the PDF is available in the chat on the. On this graph, the question was what are the data attributes and how they are mapped on screen. So I will let you have a look. So basically what we can do is to do the table with the attributes, okay, there, then the type, and then the mapping, right? So what kind of, what attributes do we have?
The rank would be.
Yeah, sure. So we have the rank. So imagine, somewhere we have a file with some columns, and then we have the rank. What other column do we have?
The team. Time.
Yes, the name of the team. The time, exactly. And what else? Do we have something else? Not sure. I don't think so. Okay. So what kind of attribute are those? So the rank, that's interesting because that's something where we have an order, obviously, because it's a rank. But it's not something quantitative. You can do some computing on ranks, but usually when you have just the rank, it's something order, right? At least it's order. The team, it's something. Nominal?
Nominal.
Yes. And the time, it's something quantitative. So maybe I will go quick because you. You all know that. And we have some retinal properties. And that's it, okay? So the rank is mapped onto the vertical axis. The time is mapped onto the horizontal axis, and the team is mapped, if you have a look at the visualization, in fact, you have colors for the teams. Okay. And obviously, we have a legend for that because the mapping is not, there's nothing obvious in it. Okay. And there are links between the different data points, so we have lines there. Okay. So the question was then, is it a good mapping or a bad mapping, or what can we say about it? So that's the part interesting there. Any opinion on that?
The colors part. I remember the rule for the seven colors we discussed earlier.
Okay. Yes. Exactly. I can. No, it will take time to switch to that, but I can do it. Remember the this one. Remember the. This image that gives you which graphic variable is good for which, oh, sorry, I have to put my pointer there. So which graphic variable is good for which judgment? And if you look at a color, so a color is a good idea when we have something without order and without quantity, which is the case for the teams, because teams is something nominal. So we just want to see the different team to be able to consider the team independently. So that's what selection is about. So choosing color is not a bad idea, but what we have there is the fact that the number in this cell tells you that if you have more than seven colors, it will be difficult to use color to do selection. Okay. Right, so let's switch back to this one. Okay, this one. Right. Okay, so two things there. The fact that we have something nominal mapped onto colors, that could be a good idea, because that's a good way to show nominal properties. But then using color is not as good as it could be, because we have more than seven values. What can we say about the other part of the mapping? So we have the rank on the vertical axis and the time on the horizontal axis. Is it good or bad? What do you think of it?
Good, because time generally go in the x-axis.
Yeah, sure. And maybe first we should remember that using the position, so the vertical axis and the horizontal axis, that's the best variable that we have. So here we we have only one variable which is quantitative. So obviously, this variable should use one of the axes. And then we have another variable which is not quantitative, which is just ordered. So we could argue that that's wasting some good properties for the vertical axis, but we don't have any other attribute to map on it. So that's probably a good idea also to use the vertical axis to show the rank, right? So I would say that's a good idea. And then putting the time on the horizontal axis, as we have seen, it's something we are used to. So if we could exchange two axes, according to Bertin, there's no reason to put the time on the horizontal axis, but still, people are used to get the time going from the left to the right on the horizontal axis. Okay, so I would say that this encoding is quite good in the choice of the visual mapping. There is one problem, and the problem is with the color, where we have more than seven values for the team attribute, so it will be difficult to use the color for selection. So I have a question in the chat about the fact that there is there are missing variables about the red part and the green part on the graph. Okay. In fact, those parts are in red and green because the four highest teams get selected to go to another championship. I don't know. I'm not a specialist of football, and the bottom three teams get eliminated or something. So that's
it's
why
it's relegation, I think. Relegation, yeah. And yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. And then the question is, does it belong to the visual encoding? And that's a good question, because we could say it is some visual. It's part of the visualization, but I would say that in fact, it's like the legend there. It's only there to add some information to the graph, but it's not really in the data set. It's some additional information, like we could put labels, or we could put some other information. For example, if you have a background in your, if you use some map, then if you have if you have some data with a position on the earth, and if you put the map below the data, then it's some kind of background information. So it's not really part of the visual mapping, the part there on the visualization. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I think it's also redundant because of the rank, because it's always from 1 to 4. Would be in the green area and so on. So
yeah, sure. You could tell the information, or you could put the information in text. But it's not a bad thing to have it on the graph, right? But it's just what I want to point out there is the fact that it's not part of the visual mapping. Okay? It's some. It's like the axis, having the axis or the legend. It's not. It's not something that is produced from the data. Okay, if we were at the table. Yes.
What would be a good representation if we don't use the color for the team? Because you said that more than seven will be a problem. So what will be a better representation?
Okay, so that's the next question, obviously. So I wanted just to start with that. And the next question is, what what would have been better on this visualization, okay? And that's a question that was asked, I think, I don't remember exactly, but I think that was a question in the exam, which was, so the next step in the exam, there was the first question was explain why this encoding is good, bad, and then there was a part on the interaction. By clicking on the legend, it is possible to show hide the teams. So there you see that there are tick marks. And in fact, if you click in the legend, you can show or hide different teams. So the question was, which step of the information pipeline is affected by this interaction? So we haven't seen yet this part, so we won't answer to that. But the other question was, which problem of the encoding is mitigated by this interaction? And that's exactly this problem. And I think the people that did this visualization were aware that it was really difficult. For example, if you want to to know what is the rank of Aston Villa, then and I'm colorblind. But even if you are not colorblind, I think it's easy to be confused by the color. For example, if you look at the Tottenham color, it's really close to this one. Or if you look at a specific curve, finding the team. The team is really difficult. For example, there are several ranges that are quite close, and so on. So I think the people that did this visualization were aware of this problem, so they added interaction. And in fact, interaction can solve those kind of problems, right? So you have to check or uncheck some of the values there, and they will disappear in the visualization, and then maybe you can have less than seven teams. Okay. So interaction can be a solution, a generic solution, when you have problems with the encoding. Because choosing color is not a bad idea when you have something nominal, right? But if you have more than seven values, then there is a problem. Right. Maybe you can come up with other ideas on how to encode this the team attribute. And in fact, it's not that simple because if you remember this chart, okay. And if you look at the number there, so we have been quite quick on that, but if you look at the numbers for selection, even for the size, it's not that high. You can have four categories and two and four for the texture. So color is the best one, in fact. Seven different values seem quite low, but in fact, that's the best as we can do. Okay. So the using interaction is probably a good idea. What else? Okay, so there is a proposition to use a mouse hovering so that the line will highlight, and then you will have an highlight of the name in the legend. So that's an interaction, basically. That's a good idea. If you want to have something static, any idea by reusing something we have seen last week with time series, for example, when you have a lot of time series, we have seen that you can superimpose them on a single graph, but there are other possibilities.
The area?
Area, so could... Yes, but in this case, I'm not sure it will be a good idea. I'm not sure to see what you mean. So remember...
I was confused.
Sorry?
No, I was confused. It's not.
Okay. Yes.
Sliding the time.
That's an idea. We could. So at a so your proposition is to at one time to show only what time of the visualization, I mean, to show only a single ranking, a single order with the with
yes.
Okay, so to have something where you have a slider. Which is the time, in fact. And then how would you encode the teams using labels or using like Arsenal? And when you change a slider, there is an animation with the teams going up and down or something like that?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be a possibility. How do we encode that? The rank, time, and team. Okay. So if you do that, the rank is encoding using the vertical axis. Okay. Now we don't have, I would say it's something punctual, something. Okay, so the time. If we have a slider and we select a specific moment in time, so there are different ways to encode that, but remember if there is a, if at different time we have different values, we can use the T property in the encoding. Okay. So we manipulate using the slider the time of the visualization. If you have a play button, for example, then the time will go by itself. And then the team, to encode the team, we have this CP for a controlled process where the team is encoded using text. Okay. We could encode the teams with colors, but it won't be. So maybe that removes some of the cluttering of the visualization, but maybe it's harder to see. I don't know. In fact, we should test this one because probably what you will see, for example, at some point, the top five or six teams are always the same with only minor modifications, and there are parts where there are no movement at all. And I think if you use a slider, you will see that there are clusters where the team, for the third place, there you can see there is a fight for the third place. You can see there is no fight anymore for the two first places. And so on. I think with the animation, you will be able to see this kind of behaviors. Okay. If you want to still see all the duration, I think there is another possibility, and that's to use multiplexing. Remember, so we will reuse, and in fact, the encoding will be the same. The visual mapping. Would be the same, and you can do something like that, and you will see there are teams going from the middle and then going, so we have the rank there. And you will see things like that, okay? And sure, you have to put the label at some point, but that's another way. So when you have multiple series, then you can use multiple visualizations that you will stack.
Okay. This way, we would have like the evolution of each team, but we would not necessarily know each one which one is in front of the other. Right?
Yeah. Sure. So, and maybe interaction could help resolve that. I don't know. For example, maybe you could have a slider And then you could have the reordering of the graphs at a specific time. The graphs could be ordered according to the rankings at that time. I don't know. There are plenty of ways to do this visualization. Okay.
Okay. And, nice.
What is interesting there is that if you look at the specific encoding in this case, in fact, you have the rank, the time on the horizontal axis, the rank on the vertical axis, and the color for the team you can use. Well, that's there's nothing in the table that tells you that you will split your vertical axis. So we should invent something there to tell that this attribute is used to do the split on the vertical axis. So we will reuse the vertical axis for each of the value of this attribute. But in if you look at the card taxonomy, there's no way to tell that. Okay. So the card taxonomy is not able to describe this kind of visual mappings. Right. What time is it? Okay, so I encourage you, so we will do that at each lecture, take one of the visualization and do this exercise. I encourage you to do that on your own before the lecture, and maybe next week we can have a look at which one can we look, one which is interesting. Check. So if I go back there, if you look at the exam from the year before, oh yes, this one is interesting. So here we have a graph that tells you the number of babies born at specific time of the day. And what is interesting there is that the axes are not orthogonal, so they don't use the horizontal or vertical axis. So in the, again, card taxonomy does not allow easily to encode that. What you can do, so I encourage you to have a look at this graph and try to find the visual encoding. What you can do is, instead of having the X and Y columns in your table, just use two other coordinates for the plane. So here we have the angle of the polar coordinate and the modulus of the polar coordinate, so the distance to the origin. So that's another way to have a parametrization of the plane. Okay. So for next week, have a look at this one, and we will do that together next week, right? And what we will do now is to to have a look at this one. Okay. So I can switch off this one. Remember last week I told you that it wasn't as simple as assigning an attribute to a visual variable, and we have seen that this doesn't capture interaction for a start. But more than that, sometimes we want to map one attribute onto multiple graphic variables. So I will present you part of the work that a PhD student did with me 2 years ago. So that's really the work of Ali Jabari here. And I will go quick through the introduction. And what is interesting there is that we have studied what kind of what visual variables can be used together when encoding a single data attribute. So to do that, first we have done a review of what techniques exist that use this what we have called composite encoding, composite visual mapping. The idea, so when one attribute is mapped onto several graphic variables. And in fact, this kind of mapping haven't been studied before. So there are some techniques using it, and but they haven't studied if people are able to perceive the actual data when this encoding, when this kind of encoding is used. So what we have done is to do a kind of systematic review of the existing visual mappings, and we have found some of them. So the and we have focused on time series there. So we have basically we have attributes in our data. A timestamp, so the time, and a quantity that varies over time, and that's encoded using the classical encoding. We have the horizontal axis for the time and the vertical axis for the quantity. Okay, and then the start of our investigation was a horizon graph that we have seen last week, because in this specific case, as we have seen last week, the quantity is encoded using three different attributes. So we have the vertical position, so the vertical axis. We have the color, because we have some red and blues, blue here for the positive values and red for the negative values. And we have also the value used. So the value tells you how far you are from zero, right? So the darker it is, so the so it gives you in which slice of the data you are. Okay. So if you want to have something formal for that, and we did that last week, so the time is encoded using the horizontal axis. The sign of the quantity is encoded using the color. The quotient. The rest, sorry, the you take the absolute value of the quantity, and then if you divide it by some specific constant, the remainder tells you the vertical position and the quotient. So that's swapped there. The quotient gives you the value. Is it dark or light? Okay. So a single attribute Q is divided into three. Is divided into three parts and mapped onto three different graphic variables. And in fact, so we gave a definition for that. We named that composite visual mapping. So when we have one data attribute, which is mapped onto more than one graphic variable. And we found other examples. One of those examples, in fact, is from a work of another student of mine, Rémi d'Autriche, there. And we worked on time series where there are a lot of high frequencies for a specific use case. So we worked on that project. We were working with a company that worked on that had some data like that, and they wanted to have some smoothing on their graphs. to make them more easy to read. So that's easy. You can just do some averaging over a window or some convolution with the kernel to have the smoothing. So that's what we did. The smooth curve there is a convolution of the actual signal with a kernel which allows the smoothing. So we took a Gaussian kernel to do that, right? But then if you do that, what you lose, so the convolution act as a low pass filter, you lose the high frequencies of the signal. And those high frequencies, in fact, were valuable for the people there. So the idea that we had is to encode the difference between, so if you do some smoothing, you will get something like that, right? And we had a look at the difference at any time between the smoothed value, the one which is displayed on the vertical axis, and the actual signal. And in fact, the difference there is encoded using the value. So if you have something light, then there is the actual value is lower than the value depicted on the graph. And if you have something dark, like there, then in fact, you have at this point a spike in your data. Okay. And in fact, this visualization works quite well. So you can see there, you have something mostly flat, but you have stripes, light and dark stripes, which tells you that at this point, there are many variations. And if you have some part of the graph where a more consistent green, gray color, then you know that the smoothing is not that far from the actual signal. Right. And if you look at the encoding, then we have a quantity which is split into two parts using a low-pass filter and a high-pass filter. So we get the low frequencies there and the high frequencies there. And the low frequencies, so the low frequency part of the signal is encoded using the vertical axis, and the high frequencies are encoded using the value. So that's an example. Then there are other examples in the literature. So for example there, that's an example where we have a signal which is not split into, so we have some redundancy there where the value is encoded two times, one time using the vertical axis and one time using the color. There we have some, it's not obvious on the slide, but we have some a gradient of colors there. Okay. So this one is redundant. So it's a composite visual mapping because the one attribute is encoded onto several variables, but the information is given twice, in fact. That's another example of redundant encoding. Remember when we have seen the color as a visual attribute, I told you that color is quite hard to use as something continuous to encode quantitative data because we have no order really in color. So you can use some gradients, but then you have to rely on a legend. So basically, when you encode quantitative values, the graphic variable value, so dark or light, is far better to encode quantitative values. But people do want plots with colors. So usually the bad idea is to use some rainbow color map, and there are better ideas. And recently, people have proposed what are called perceptually uniform color maps, where you have a gradient of color, but the gradient of color is consistent with a gradient of value. So again, that's a redundant encoding because you encode the attributes two times, one with the color, so it goes from something a dark purple there, to some yellow, and going through blues and greens there. So you have a shading of a gradient of colors, but you go also from dark to light. So the information is redundant. You could use some grayscale encoding, but it's more appealing for the people. And a cube helix is another redundant color map which use more. So you also have a red, and you have greens, and you have blue. So they try to use to choose the hues and to order them in a logical order, so that the colors that are usually light are on this part, and the colors that are usually dark are on this part. So it works also. It's not that that nice, but it works. Okay. So that's examples. And there are several other examples. That's order of magnitude markers. The idea in there is that you encode both the significative part of a number and the order of magnitude with the bar. So, for example, there you have something between 4 or 5 times 10 to the power 5. Okay, and the blue values are negative exponent for the order of magnitude. Okay, and here, like in a horizon graph, the value is split into three different parts. So we have the sign, which use the color, the sign of the exponent. Sorry. So for example, you write a number using the scientific notation. So your number Q is written like A times 10 to the power B, and so B, that's this part. M, sorry, I should have written that. So the sign of the exponent use the color. The absolute value is encoded on the vertical axis, what is it called? The mantissa, is that it? Is mapped onto the vertical axis also. Right, so that's other examples. And what you have done is, in this work, we have studied those questions. Well, okay, is it a good idea to split the attributes? Can we make judgments? And the hypothesis there was that depending on what graphic variables we will use, and depending on how we split the data attribute, then some mappings will be effective and other mappings won't be effective. Okay. And in this work, so we studied only the part on the which combination of variables. So there are two design space in this problem: how you split the data attribute and how which graphic variables you use to show the different parts of the data attributes. So what we couldn't tackle the whole problem. So what we use a separation in bounds, like in a horizon graph. So that was fixed in our study, and we studied the combinations for the encoding of all possible graphic variables. So I won't go into the details of the experiment. We presented some visualization to user, and they had to tell you. So that's for horizon graph. So two time series and two places, and they had to compare the value on those two places and to tell if one is higher or lower than the other. So that's just a binary comparison, but they had also to estimate the difference between the two. And using those parameters, we were able to tell which combination in this table are better than other combination. Okay. So this study is quite preliminary, because I think the way you split the data attribute should also be considered. But still, that's an interesting topic. And it shows that visual mapping is not as simple as filling a table. You can also choose to split some variables, to merge some variables, and so on. Right. So that was the point of this presentation. I will put it on the web page, and I will put the paper if you want to know more about this this work. And I will switch back to the lecture slide. If there are questions, feel free to ask them while I'm switching slides. And at any time, of course. Okay. Let's go back. Where are my... Okay, so last week we had a tour through the visualization zoo. Let's go back to the next part in the lecture, namely interaction. Right. So remember, what you can see is a view of the information visualization pipeline, where you have your data on the left, and where your data goes to the screen. Okay, so that goes from the data to the user. And if you do that, right, you can print graphics, and that's it. But since we use a computer, that would be a huge loss if we don't use what is very powerful on our computers, the fact that we can interact with those abstract things. Okay, and so. Interaction, basically, I won't go into details about the interaction, but that the fact that at some point you will have a loop where you have that's the way we perceive and we act with the external world. So you basically you have some information going on inside your brain, and at some point you act as a result on the external world. So that when you you take an object, you left it, and then it falls, and then you make some assumptions about the causality between what you do and the consequences of your action, and that's how you build a model of your external world. There have been experiments with, so for sensitive people, you may wait, shut down the sounds to not hear this story. But for example, they did an experiment with little kitties, with two of them. So when they are just born, they don't see yet, so they have to And in fact, their vision develops in the few days after the birth. And what they did is to they used two kitties linked together with an axis, so that when one moved, the other was moving with the exact same movement. But one of the kitty was able to control the movement, and the other wasn't in control of that movement. And if you do that, so they experience exactly the same thing. They have the same inputs into their visual system. But one becomes blind, the one where there is no connection between what he's doing and what it is seeing outside, and the other develop vision because there is causality between the movement and what is perceived. So this loop is very important. That's how we build some model of the outside world. And if you add some computer system in it, then you have some computing power, you have some processing, some storing, and so on. And this part there is not accessible to humans because it's so thin. So you have to build some interface between this world there and, so that's a screen there. So that's the digital world. And so you have some peripheral that allows to go from our physical world where we have our perceptions and our interactions to the digital world where everything is not accessible to our perceptions, right? And what is powerful there is that if this part on the right is fast enough, then you will have a loop there where you feel like you are manipulating directly the object that are shown on screen. But in fact, when you use your mouse, you are giving some instruction to the computer so that there are some pixels that are redrawn in a specific way. Okay? So this loop there is the interaction. And that's something powerful because that's how we are built to understand and to act on the world. So if we could recreate this interactive loop with objects that are totally abstract, then maybe that's a way to gain some understanding and to build some mental model of those abstract objects. And that's the goal of visualization, interactive visualization. So for now, we have seen this transformation, and what we need is to be able to go back. And in fact, in this pipeline, there are different points where you can go back. And that's what we have on the bottom of this part. We can act on the view transformation, so the part that maps the visualization onto the screen. We can act onto the visual mapping. So interactively, you could be able to select which attribute will get mapped onto which visual abstraction. And you could also act onto the data transformation, so the part where you go from the real data to the data that you will show on your visualization. Right? And to be more concrete, we can have a look if we go back to remember the Gapminder visualization. I will switch to it right now. Does the online version work? Okay, you have it there, so you can still see me. So remember this visualization, in fact, it's not only something static, there are interactions there. And what we can do now is to look at what, so I will go. we are. So keep this chart in mind. We will try to understand for the different interactions that are possible on the gapminder visualization. Are they targeted at view transformation, at the visual mapping, or at the data transformation? So maybe we can start by having a look at what is interactive. And for example, there, color, there is a drop-down item where you could change. So I'm looking at if there is something sensitive. For example, incoming groups, there are three levels of incoming groups. And then now the color is mapped onto some orange for high income, some green for middle income, and to some red to low income. So that's an interaction, not directly with the visualization itself. There are widgets to do the interaction, but I can select what the color will represent. Okay. So if I do that, what do you think is that? So I did something else. I choose to map the population onto the color. So what am I doing there? I'm looking if I can country properties. Okay, one region. So to switch back. When I'm doing that, am I acting on the view transformation? Am I acting on visual mapping? Or am I acting on data transformation? What do you think?
I think data transformation.
The data transformation?
Yeah.
We could say that because we are selecting another attribute as an input. But I will more likely go to visual mapping. Yes, exactly. Because we are touching to which attribute is linked to which visual property, right? So when we do this interaction, in fact, we are changing, remember the table with the card taxonomy. So we can encode the mapping. And what we are doing really now is to change this encoding. Okay. There are other interactions that allows to change the visual mapping. For example, if you look at the vertical axis there, you can tell, so, oh, I don't want life expectancy on the vertical axis, but rather child mortality. So what I've been doing right now is think of our data set with attributes. We have life expectancy, we have child mortality, we have and so on, okay? And we have the X, Y, and so on. So first, we income. What do we have on the? So income is on the. Income is on the horizontal axis, and we have switched from life expectancy to child mortality. That's exactly what we have done with this interaction, right? Child mortality and then life expectancy. Okay, so we are acting really on the visual mapping while doing this interaction.
I thought like you were changing the completely data, so maybe because it was a first mortality and the later expectancy, so I thought it would be a data transformation.
Yes, that's not a bad answer, data transformation. In fact, this part selects some data this part is, it's not that clear. For example, another example that is even that maybe is a bit clearer. For example, there you have checkboxes, and you can select some countries, right? I don't know why the checkboxes are not. So I want to select, I don't know, Brazil, Belgium, China. Okay. So I can select some countries. And now we only see the countries that have been selected. I would put that into data transformation. Okay. It's not that evident because if you look, I've reduced so the size maps. It's I have to switch off my camera. So the size is mapped onto the population there, and you can also interact with that. And to map size onto babies per woman or something like that, if you want. Okay. So here we have population. So this part acts on visual mapping. And there we are doing selection. So in fact, we have this table and we select only the lines in the table where the country is the, one of the countries selected. So I would say that this part is using data transformation. But it's not that evident because, for example, you can see there that you can still have the other countries shown on the graph. So it's not only selection. In fact, you apply a different mapping to a group of countries and to the rest of the countries, you apply some transparency. So that's a mix between data transformation where you select only part of the data and visual mapping where you change the mapping but for only a subset of the data. So this model, again, it's not as simple as you act just on visual mapping or you act just on data transformation, right? It's not as simple as that. But some interactions are mostly targeting visual mapping and some interaction are mostly targeting data transformation. So when you have selection, I would put that onto data transformation, right? And then look, here we are. We have some tools and we have a lens there where we can select a part of the graph and focus on this part of the graph, right? And there is a tool there where we can pan into the graph. When I do that, any idea of what we are doing? Sorry. View transformation, yeah, exactly, right? So if I'm back there, there's no ambiguity there. You could say, okay, that's also selection because when you zoom into a part of the graph, then you can see only some of the data. But in fact, remember visual abstraction, we have that's the graph, but in an abstract space where all the dimensions do not have bounds and the projection onto the view is the part where you cut a part in your graph to put it onto pixels on the screen. So really what we are doing there is to act on the view transformation. Right. There are more ambiguous cases. For example, I don't know if it's the case on this one. No, in on previous version of you could choose. Maybe I have to go back to that. No, you could choose whether the axis are linear. Oh, that's it. Here you can choose if the axes are linear or logarithmic. So for life expectancy, it's not a good idea. But for example, maybe for carbon emissions, you can see that it's mostly linear with income in when you use a logarithmic scale there. And so I choose to go from a linear axis, okay, to so we should zoom to this part of the graph. So that was that's when you use something linear mapping for the carbon emissions. And if you switch to logarithmic axis, you will get that. And when I do that, what am I doing really? It's not that simple. You could argue that you are transforming the data, right? So you are computing a new data attribute, which is the log of the value. And then you are mapping this data attribute onto the vertical axis. I would put that into a view transformation, right? Because you just change the coordinates of your graph. The visual abstraction is the same. On the vertical axis, you display the emissions. On the horizontal axis, you display the income. That's just how this visual abstraction is mapped onto pixel that is being manipulated, right? So it's not that clear where the log transformation should fit there. Do you consider that you transform the scale, so the pixels themselves? Do you consider that you add a transformation step into the visual mapping? And you could also say that because remember, in this table, we have been quite fast on that, but remember, there are two columns labeled with. Don't remember. D. Never mind, I will go back there. D, F, and D. Okay, so there is a D, F, and another D. Like the F expectancy is Q, and we just use this column there. And in fact, the column in the middle is for transformation. So you could argue that you will use a log transformation to transform something quantitative onto something quantitative. And then what you are really doing is to change the visual mapping. Okay? So the boundaries there between the different steps of the pipeline are not as precise. So the pipeline is really a simplification. Are we acting on the view transformation, on the visual mapping? Usually it's a mix of that. But still, that's a good framework when you design a visualization, you can ask yourself, okay, what should the user be able to act on? Maybe you will choose the visual mapping and you don't want the user to be able to interfere with that because you think the visual mapping is a good one. For example, if you do some data visualization in an online newspaper, maybe you don't want the user to mess up with the visual mappings because you are the expert. But maybe you want to let the user be able to focus, so to zoom on some part of the graph. So you will allow some view transformation, but no visual mappings interaction, Right. So that's your decision to make on what kind of interaction you will allow. But just so that you know, there are different levels, and you should consider those levels. Okay. Not sure if I was clear on that, but still. Maybe what we will do now is to go on with some examples of interactive visualization. And again, you will see that what we have seen with interaction is not as simple as in the when you go that way of the pipeline. It's not as simple with the visual mappings. For interaction, there is even more complexity. And in fact, for visual mappings, we are lucky. We have some guidelines. We have some tables done by Bertin and by other researcher after him. But for interaction, we are a bit left alone, in fact. And you will see that I will show you some examples with interactive visualization just to show you the variety of interaction that can be imagined. And that's virtually, there's no limit to that process. And I haven't found a way to present that with some rules or some regularities. So I will show you some examples, and we will discuss those examples afterward. So a first example there is called a squatter dice, and it's really a generalization. So let me show you the picture in bigger size. A generalization of scatter plot matrices. And the idea is that scatter plot matrices are not interactive. And how can we add some interaction onto scatter plot matrices? Remember, scatter plot matrices, you have a data set with many quantitative attributes. And so there's no simple mapping where you can show all those quantitative attributes, because for quantities, we have, as you know, horizontal position, vertical position, a bit of the value, the size, and that's it, right? So if we have many more attributes, and in this case, we have, we'll see the different data set in the demo, what we can do is to have some kind of multiplexing on the horizontal and vertical axis, and to do all scatter plots for all possible pairs of attributes, right? And then the interaction will allow us to go from one scatter plot to another scatter plot while preserving as much as possible some context so that you can follow the different items across the transitions between the different scatter plots. So here, one of the scatter plot is selected there, and that's the scatter plot that we see on the right of the picture. There are some interaction where you can do some selection in this visualization. We'll see them in the demo. Before launching the demo, I will explain what's going on because it's quite hard to follow if you are not in command of the interaction. That one of the problem with interactive visualization, if you show only the output, since you don't control the input, you will see that as an animation without any link between your actions and the consequences of your action, and it's quite hard to follow. So let me first explain. The goal there is to be able to navigate into this matrix to change this scatter plot. So at some point, you will have a scatter plot and you will go to another scatter plot that is either right on the left in the matrix or right below or above in the matrix. And going one column away from where you are, or one line away from where you are, consists in exchanging one of the axes. So since on the horizontal axis, they all share, so on this line, they all share the same vertical axis. If you go left, you will keep the vertical axis, but you will change the horizontal axis. And in the scattered dice visualization, the idea is to use the third dimension as a way to do some transition between two scatter plots. So when you will go to the left, they will add a third dimension that goes from your screen towards you. And this third axis will be used to map the new dimension that will be shown in the end on the horizontal axis. So in this case, your data will become three-dimensional. And in fact, the scatter plot, if you use some orthographic projection, this three-dimensional visualization is exactly the same as the two-dimensional visualization. As long as you have the projection is orthogonal, you won't be able to see any difference. So that you see the difference, they will switch from an orthogonal projection onto a perspective projection. So then you will start to see the third dimension. And as soon as you see this cube of points, so you will have a 3D scatter plot, then they will rotate the scatter plot. So the scatter plot is flat, it will be expanded to the third dimension, it will rotate, and then the perspective will be removed so that it will be flat again, but with the axis that was orthogonal there, since you had a rotation, it will become horizontal, and the axis that was horizontal will become orthogonal to the screen. Not sure I'm clear. Let's switch to the demo. Okay, so we have the various part there, one scatter plot, and so there is an explanation, but I don't think you have the sound. So the different parts are explained, the scatter plot, and the one in the focus is the one there at the intersection of the lines of the column. And okay, that's it. We'll go slower. When you click on the right arrow, so for now we are on this scatter plot, and we have a diagonal because we have acceleration on both axes. Okay, we are on one of the scatter plot of the diagonal. And if I go step by step on the visualization, that's the part where we start to have some perspective. So there, since everything is aligned, you don't see much of the perspective. And then the rotation starts. So acceleration, the axis which was on the horizontal axis, start to move, and the other axis start to enter. That's model there. And once the rotation is finished, we have everything flat again there, and we have switched to the scatter plot next to this one. So I'll go up. Okay, and there is a fast version there. So I think with the video it will be hard to follow for you. I will put the video online so that you can have a look at the video. But even if with the video not being able to interact by yourself makes it hard to understand. Okay. So that's an example of visualization where interaction. Sorry. That. Again, doesn't fit well, sorry, in this schema, because what we are doing really is we are changing the visual mapping because one of the axes is changed. But it's not a simple change into our own. So imagine we have something like that, some point there. So that's a scatter plot. And the interaction is really switching from one quantitative attribute onto the so there, that's the vertical axis, from one vertical axis to another. But the whole interaction is not just selecting which attribute is mapped onto which graphic property. You have a whole interaction that has been designed. So the interaction is the input, how you do that. So here you click onto the arrow, but also the transition, how you go from one mapping to another mapping. So what is very interesting in this visualization technique is that this transition of the mapping is made using an animation that involves a certain dimension. And then there is another way to interact. So you can hit the arrow there, but you can also interact directly with the scatter plot using different interactions. So first you can just move your mouse, and then you control the animation. So previously when you press the arrow button, then there is an animation, and there it's an animation, but that you control if you use the mouse. So if you start in a, so if you go all the way there, this path allows you to control and to go forth and back into the animation to better understand. So you can control the pace of the animation there. And there are other interactions where you want to go from one point to another, and then the system jumps from a scatter plot to scatter plot. Okay. So I see that it's about time to finish the lecture. So next week we'll see other interactive visualization. I will put the video online so that you can have a look maybe before the lecture. And if we will also see some interactive examples where you can get the code and run the demo, so that you can try by yourself the behavior of the visualization. So I will put that online before the next lecture. I will do that this weekend. Okay, so that's it for today. Next week we'll go on with interaction, because there are plenty of things to see. And then after that, we'll focus on structured data like hierarchies and graphs. Could you repeat how the change? So in the visual mapping, that's really going from this mapping there, where one attribute is mapped onto the vertical axis, to this mapping where another attribute is mapped onto the vertical axis. Right, so that's a switch between two tables, one where the you have this cell filled with the P, and to another table where you have this cell filled with the P. Right? But this table doesn't tell you anything about the interaction, how the transition is made, how that's and there's no simple way to describe interaction or to formalize interaction of this kind. Okay.
So if I change the from x-axis to y-axis and y-axis to x-axis, is it still visual transformation? Sorry, view,
yeah,
transformation.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Is it a view or visual view? Right.
Sorry.
If I change the axis from x-axis to y-axis and y-axis to x-axis, interchange it, so will it be a visual transformation or
view? Yeah, sure. It's a visual transformation. You are acting on the visual transformation.
Okay.
Okay. So you are acting. You are acting there. Right. So see you next week. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for today.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor, I have a question.
Yes.
You asked us to design for the project. You asked the design step to choose two questions and try to design a visualization to them. How do you know if these two questions that we're going to choose are correct or not?
How do we know if they are good?
If these are good or not.
That's your judgment to make. I expect you to choose questions that interest you. So, when you design a visualization, you cannot judge the questions. The thing is, you have the data are given. You don't judge the data. The questions are given, let's say, because you want to show something or something interests you, and then you have to find the best fit between the data and the questions that you are trying to answer. So the choice of the question is really up to you, right?
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Professor, I wanted to ask one more thing. Do you have any internship available for the visualization? I had mailed you also, but...
Sure. There are some subjects from colleagues that I will forward to the world students a subject. And for myself, I'm not sure because I don't have any funding for now, so I'm looking into fundings. And I have some topics that that interest me. That if people are interested in internships, they can contact me, and we can discuss that. But I have no guarantee of fundings for now. And especially, I have no guarantee for a funded PhD after the internship. So that's why I'm quite I'm not advertising anything about that. Okay, but I will answer your email. Is that
Suraj? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In fact, I forwarded your email to some colleagues. I will let.
Okay.
You.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.